Radio Tartus International, from the heart of Europe to the world.
Well, hello, boys and girls. It's that time of the week again. It's your sideways look at the news with me, Lee G. Banks, the zit on the face of the earth, and that cleaner than clean Mr. Clean with the squeaky voice in Paris, it's Mark Gander.
Well, hi there, listeners. It's nice to speak to you again.
And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We have another surprise for you this week. Standing in for Eric Wiltshire. Remember, Eric is usually sitting on top of the High Tatras Mountains, covered in white stuff and shouting, ho, ho, ho. Milo. Milo. Ladies and gentlemen, standing in for Eric is Milo. That's actually Mark Gander. But Milo is here. Yes, Milo's here. We have a special guest. He's a little doggy. He's about, what, 6 inches tall? He's one of those little dogs that you feel like picking up and squeezing in your drink. He's so lovely and colourful and sweet and nice. The only thing is, Mark, your bark, right, your yes. bark, Mark.
Is worse than my bite.
Yeah, Mark. That, he doesn't sound like that. This is my house, right? This is my house, it? And this dog is visiting, and all it does is growl at me.
Well,
he just sits there. Look, he's 6 inches tall. I'm 6'5", you stupid dog.
Yeah, well, he probably feels dominated by you. He's probably a bit overpowered.
I've never touched him.
I have made any suggestions about what you've done with the dog. It's probably all the hair, actually. He's probably jealous.
No, he's all, like, short. He's got a really short coat.
He's
quite manicured. My hair?
Yeah.
My hair? How lovely for you to speak about my hair. So gently and so kindly. Well, actually, it fits in quite well with things that we're doing this week, doesn't it? I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, before I go, something I've just completely forgotten to mention. Eric, my lovely, lovely Eric, is away on Euro business again this week. So he will be back next week and he'll be taking charge and being wonderful. But this week, it's me, a Mark, a Milo!
And he's left us to our own devices.
Mm. Yeah. How many devices have you got?
Oh,
I've got a bike.
You're talking about my vices.
No, devices.
Oh, devices.
That's actually when you've lost your vices, isn't
right.
it? You've been devised.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, that's me cough. That's totally unprofessional. Are you ready?
Right. Okay.
I just want to... I think, quite seriously, we need to do what everybody else has done, but I don't see any reason why not to do it. And that's Mark. You get in the show a lot so this week, don't you? Mark, the death of John Lennon.
Yes, well, where were you when John Lennon died? Where were you when you heard that John Lennon died on about the 10th time or the 20th time? Or where were you on the 30th anniversary of his death?
Don't you think it's an important anniversary?
Well, I think it is an important anniversary, and I do remember exactly where I was.
Where were you?
The same way that I remember where I was when JFK was killed. But I have to say that I have a sense, really, that the media is going on about this, not because of John Lennon, but simply because it sells papers. And I think that it's being a bit over-emotional about it. I wonder what John Lennon would say about it.
Give Ireland back to the Irish, I suppose. But it's, you know what, I can't understand that. That's one of the heinous attacks on Britain's media that really winds me up. Why do people think that we just write stuff, like, about John Lennon to sell newspapers? Quite feasibly, you're right. You know, we are in the business. Writers, as much as anybody else, are in the business of making money. And one of the best and biggest and most prolific ways to get yourself published as a writer is to become a journalist and get in a newspaper. But obviously, you've got to write about things that were popular. And the murder of John Lennon, at that time, when the whole of the world had suddenly grown into this youth political flux, was absolutely horrendous.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a shocking event. I mean, and I have to say, me and many of the other people I knew at the time, you know, quite frankly, we were so stunned, we wept.
Yeah.
But it is important, and it really, you know, shook me up. And yeah. I have to say that when I hear his music nowadays, I still feel shaken up. But on the other hand, I sort of feel that this sort of anniversary attention that's going on and on and on, I don't know why, but it doesn't seem to sort of carry it across. It doesn't seem to carry the spirit across.
It's because he's a legend.
Well, I feel it's almost being turned... I think he's been turned almost into an urban myth, actually.
Well, yeah, well, that's what happens, isn't it? You know, if you think we're going to talk about a couple of people in a minute, but if you think about... For somebody, how old was he when he died? I can't honestly remember. He was just coming up 40, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and to be shot outside the Decatur building by some idiot who'd got some great fantasy about him. And to die when his career had actually broken up with the Beatles, his career had just started to take off again. He was actually recording some fabulous, fabulous music. He'd rebuilt his family, and he was... destined to stay at the top of the music business, and it all went. It's an analogous with somebody getting to the top of the career and being wiped off the face of the earth by a bus. Their family would still eulogize them 30 years on, but John Lennon's family was the world.
Well, yes, he was, and for many people he is. But, you know, once again, I just think that really this is being sort of tapped as a way of producing some writing, as a way of producing some sales.
Yeah, but I can't see what's wrong with that. What could be wrong with it? Why is that wrong?
Well, because
if you make cakes and put them in a cake shop and sell them, you're doing something to satisfy somebody's interest and lust for food. I'm making money out of it. Yeah, why can't a newspaper do that?
Because these aren't cakes. This is like if I made cakes last year and then I got up and told everybody about it. Exactly. They'd be completely off now. And I just don't think really that it is... I don't think it really conveys the John Lennon spirit, whatever that was.
Well, yeah, but people can't convey the John Lennon spirit. He's been dead for 20, 30 years, hasn't
exactly
he? So his spirit's like sort of faded vaguely into the background.
Well, I think it's being turned into a bit of a tourist industry, really. I mean, I was tremendously sorry a few years ago when I went to Liverpool to find, you know, that really still the centre of their tourist industry seems to be based on the Beatles. And it sort of turns into a pilgrimage. And yet, that's meant to be the cultural sort of, the city of culture for a few years ago. I can't remember what year it is. Yeah. It's really come on. And they're not able, for some reason, to find their new identity. And I think that's a tremendous shame. John Lennon's very important. And the Beatles are important.
But but who's more important? A rock star like John Lennon? Or
Elvis.
A grand politician, no, like a grand politician like Churchill.
Well, in their own context, they're equally important.
And should Churchill be forgotten about and not written about and not eulogised and not have films made about him?
I don't think he should be forgotten about. I mean,
so why should John Lennon?
No, I'm not for a moment suggesting that he should be forgotten.
Let's move on then. Let's move on because here we have it. Here's another one for you to moan about, little Marky Mark.
Yes.
Where's Milo? I've lost Milo. Oh God, I hope I haven't. I hope he's not got up the chip. There he is! Elvis.
Yes.
Elvis is dead again.
Yes, well...
He's a real tragedy.
The difference between Elvis and John Lennon is that in some way John Lennon seems to conjure up a sort of a mood and a sort of an essence and a spirit of something, you know, tremendously good. Whereas Elvis was a legend. I mean, he was a legend in his field. He was a legend for his music, but he's not a man who's sort of, you know, whose memory is carrying principles along. So it's a very different kind of legend here, I think.
Anger about? What do you mean Elvis Presley wasn't carrying principles about? He did some of the most powerful Christian and gospel music ever. He extolled the virtues of Christianity through his music.
Did he? Did he intend to do that?
Of course he did. You don't record 10 albums of gospel songs if you don't intend to... eulogize gospel.
Oh, I don't think he was an evangelist for Christianity at all.
His powerful Christian feelings were the things that ruled his life. I'm not saying he lived a wonderful life.
No.
But his heart was in the right place. Anyway, we're not talking about that, Elvis. Mm. we're talking about this Elvis.
Well, I think that John Lennon, who really was to a certain extent an evangelist for peace, and I don't think that Presley was an evangelist for Christianity. I think Presley's music was absolutely fantastic, and his image was fantastic.
Yeah, he was
John Lennon's memory, you know, I think lives on for other reasons.
Yeah, I know, I'm still going to talk about Elvis, who's just died.
Who's just died?
Elvis has just died. What do you think I was doing? Elvis has just died. That's why he says Elvis is dead again. There's a bloke, right, in Britain, and I can't remember where he's from now. I think he's from the Midlands somewhere.
Yeah.
And he's just died, and he's 70. And he changed his name to Elvis. And he changed it that long ago and kept it such a secret that nobody actually knows his real name.
Not even his family.
Well, I suppose his family do know him, but his family don't know he's dead because they don't know his name. Hang on, I'm just reading it. I'll see if there was any sense in what I just said.
No, I don't think there was a lot of sense, but it was a good joke.
Yeah, but he said, they're saying, right, he died of heart problems, he lived in a nice little house, he changed his, the name of his house to everything, and, the funeral, this is tragic, unlike Elvis's, took place at an empty crematorium.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. So anyway, last one in the trilogy of dead rock stars. I think this is really good, you know. Jim Morrison, finally, you know, the Doors, you know who Jim Morrison is.
Yeah.
He's actually now...
He lives around the corner from me, actually, now.
But he doesn't live there. Do you live near Pere Lachaise?
Do I what?
Do you live near Pere Lachaise?
Well, within a few miles.
Within a few cities, like?
Yeah. You're in the same blinking city.
I know, it's up Pere Lachaise. Anyway, if the listeners remember... One of the blows to Jim Morrison's glitteringly alcoholic career as being probably in his way more gorgeous and, I dare say this, a better singer than Elvis in a lot of ways, came to an ignominious end just before his death when he was accused, and I've forgotten where now, Dade County, he was accused in Dade County of indecent exposure on the stage.
Yes.
And, He was taken to court for it, and the Lizard King, right, the Lizard King died before he could clear his own name. And this is amazing to me, and I think this is really good. The outgoing governor of Florida...
I've just got to move off
from it. Bye, then. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. The outgoing Florida governor, Charlie Grist... has actually managed to secure enough votes on the state's executive clemency board to ensure that Mr. Morrison, the former leader of the seminal 60s group The Doors, will receive a posthumous pardon for an indecent exposure conviction. Well, I think that's magic. That's 40 years it's taken to clear some outrageous rock star of doing something that he never did. Are you back?
Yeah, no, I am back, yeah. And I mean, I suppose it's pretty good, but I mean, I just wonder what brought this all on. Why did they raise this particular problem? I have to say,
If he didn't do it, why shouldn't he be cleared? Why should he have that going down in history against his name?
Yep, yeah, that's right. I have to say, there's just so many more things going on at the moment. But yes, no, you're quite right. I mean, if he really wasn't responsible for that, if he wasn't guilty, you're quite right. He should have his name cleared. It just seems to me extraordinary that sort of got moved up somebody's agenda at this particular moment. I understand that the politician who moved that to happen, in fact, was just about to retire from politics.
Yeah. And, so there's no great gain to him.
Well, on the other hand, maybe he wanted to have that.
In this big wide world, you know, we're going to talk about important things. We're going to talk about WikiLeaks. We're going to talk about the strike of the students. We're going to talk about all sorts. What happens to you when you're dead? What happens to all the information you've placed on the internet? What happens to it all? We're going to talk about some big issues.
Yeah.
But the simple fact is that news isn't just big issues. And that's why people who are not within the news sometimes feel slighted. I think it's an incredibly good story that 40 years down the line, somebody's actually managed to clear the name of one of rock and roll's biggest and greatest icons.
Has his family responded at all?
Well, I think most.
Presumably, he must have some family who you think they are?
Well, no, he didn't have any kids.
Oh, yeah, but he didn't have any brothers or sisters. I mean, it would be very good for them. I mean, I'm sure that that would give people a lot of comfort if
Yeah, but if you think his brother now, his parents are obviously dead, but his brother, Jim would have been, well, in his 70s.
Yeah.
And his brother, he had two older brothers, and I wouldn't have thought they were still around to discuss it. No, I just think it's a good thing, and I think to eulogise John Lennon as well is a good thing. And finally, on our little, happy little hippie trail, let's mention the bloke in Germany who describes himself as an old hippie. Well, I'm an old hippie.
Yes.
But he had a 2-metre-high marijuana plant decorated as a Christmas tree. Like, he was hiding it. Anyway, the police spotted it and took it off him.
Does this mean that the German police are having a happy Christmas?
Well, I once got in trouble off the police for something like that.
A Christmas tree?
No, what it was, I was in the pub, and a bloke who worked for the drug squad came in. And he was talking about he'd just done a big cannabis bust in somewhere, Telford, I think it was. And I just said to him, quite genuinely, I just said to him quite openly, I said, well, what do you actually do with it when you've confiscated it? And he looks at me with great pride in his face and said, we burn it. I said, well, what do you arrest the all the hippies for? That's what they do.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. So,
but I mean, did you ask him how he burned it? I mean, maybe they did burn it. It's sort of in sort of nice little sort of rolled up packets.
What they do? They've got big incinerators. They chuck it all in a big incinerator. I'm not going into any other details of that because I know things.
They didn't get an enormous packet of Ritzler or something then.
Nah, you don't do that, mate. No, I tell you what. No, drugs are illegal. Drugs are illegal, and so they should remain.
Yes, and certainly growing them as Christmas trees, I think, is reprehensible.
Well, it is, isn't it? The poor old chap. I do feel a little bit sorry for him because he wasn't doing any harm, really, was he? But anyway, yeah. But don't do it at home, boys and girls. Right, let's move on to the messages because we've actually got to move on to the show in a minute. The first message we've got, ladies and gentlemen, is another one from Dorothy.
Once again.
Yeah, she's not very happy again.
Our Dot, yeah.
Yeah, we love you, Dot. Don't be unhappy all the time. Anyway, she says... Might be a bit tongue in the cheek, but, right, she said, I'm reading it now. I'm just going to read it as it's written again. She says, thank you for showing me up to be a grumpy old woman on last week's show. At least I'm not as grumpy as you lot. It's like a grumpy night in Grumpy Town when the grumps go out for a grumpy drink. I think she beat you, Mark.
That is it. Well, I have to say, I feel I'm in a grumpy mood today, and I don't know why.
Well, yeah, I'm in a really bad mood, but. And I've lost Milo. I don't know. The fire's burning. No, he won't be on there. Anyway, Gary at the Cock Inn, right?
Yeah.
Just sent us a nice little missive just saying thank you for the publicity you've given to us over raising money for the prostate cancer charities. Prostate, as you
find.
Money
meaning prostate, yes.
Yeah. Sure. If you remember, these are the blokes down the pub who did a calendar, a naked calendar. And it's horrible, man. It's absolutely horrible. Nicely photographed, nicely produced, but, oh, when you see Fat Reg just in his wellies, it's awful. And then there's one from Colin Sheeky, another new listener. And here he says, right, I'm just reading it. He sent this. He just says, I'm making a new blockbuster movie. Would it be all right if Eric auditioned for Caesar and Mark could play the salad? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, you might laugh, yeah. I just thought, well, I didn't even get a mention. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'll just come in and toss over the salad, yeah. Oh, see, yeah.
You're going to what over me?
Never said anything.
No, well, I hope not.
Oh, I see. No. Dear boy, shall we move on to the stories now?
Please, yes, quickly.
Right. I think the first thing we've got to look at, really, is this student riots thing. I just can't believe... that people... All right, let's put the cat amongst the pigeons. I'll ask you straight. Do you think that the students are wrong for rioting?
Do I think they're wrong for rioting? Well, I think they are. I think that getting into riots and getting into that kind of behaviour, I don't think at the end of the day that it's going to help them at all. I can understand the strength of their passion. I'm not surprised that they're going that way, but I think that at the end of the day, they play straight into the hands of people who want to maybe make them out as extremists and who act irresponsibly anyway. So I think it's strategically or tactically speaking, it's a very, very bad move. But I have
what
to
about,
say...
What about their attitude towards Nick Clegg?
Well, yeah, I think...
Is it really? Do you think those riots were simply about, like, all the students are putting forward saying that this is because Nick Clegg backtracked? Basically, Nick Clegg lied to the students. Do you think that's fair?
Well, I think that does seem to be fair, doesn't it? I mean, I think most people seem to be absolutely shocked at what Nick Clegg's doing. And it seems to me that even his own party now is starting to come apart at the seams. It's just really quite incredible. I mean, you know, he was meant to be going there on some kind of equal basis and to have a real influence. And he just seems to be really, you know, supporting a government in power. Probably in the new year, there's going to be quite a crisis. And although he's got an agreement to stay there 5 years, maybe he's going to have to go back on it. I think he's losing a lot of respect.
Yeah, do you really? You think this has damaged the coalition? If you think how long's the coalition been in power now? What, 6 months? You know, what actually has the coalition managed to do?
Well, I tell you, it's certainly damaged Nick Clegg, and I mean, it's damaged his party, and it'll continue to do that until finally, I think, enough people get together and take a stand against Nick Clegg. I don't think he'll do it without pressure from his own party.
I think, yeah, as people who've been listening to the show for a while will know that, and these are my views personally, not the views of the show particularly, but I think Tony Blair did an incalculable amount of damage to Britain. I think the other one, the one-eyed Undertaker, Brown, he did even more damage through complete stupidity to this country. And we all actually, as much as we didn't want to, saw Cameron and Clegg coming in. And we all breathed a sigh of relief, particularly as it was a coalition government, which in principle, in very simple, basic terms, means we've got the government we voted for, because we've got everybody in that we voted for, although it didn't exactly work that way.
There's a balanced government, and they're compromising because they're actually putting pressure on each other.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to be happening.
It doesn't. And it's not happened in so many ways and shown people up to be what they are. But if you think what's happened now, and I'm very, very passionate about this, what the Tories with the Lib Dems backing have managed to do is commercialise the English education system. We've actually gone right back to the old ways.
Yeah.
You know, when you know, a decade, 20 years ago, only rich people could actually get into university.
Yeah.
Now we're headed for the same situation.
You say this is with Lib Dems backing. I wouldn't even like to say that. I think it's simply, you know, with Lib Dems basically tacit agreement not to oppose anything, which I think is actually even more serious.
I don't do tacit. If they're not going to do it any harm, then they're backing it.
Well, I think that, you know, they put them in position
that's like standing on the road and watching somebody murder somebody and not doing anything to help.
That's what they're doing. I think they're acting supine, and I think that that's why everybody's sort of so distressed and feels so betrayed about them, because actually, you know, in order, I think, to sort of maintain some kind of apparent position in power, they're prepared to let things go and actually let things go by, maybe for, you know, sort of greater experience or what have you. It doesn't look good for them. It's not going to do them any favours, and I can't imagine they'll ever recover from this. They're humiliated.
Do you think these riots... You see, I'll do one last point, because I do think that really, you know, the Tories have actually managed to get what they want, which is to take the education system back decades. And what perhaps one of the benefits to this happening is that students who, you know, every man, jack, thing, kid, whatever they are, human being, who goes to university at the moment either takes a course in media studies, which has got, believe me, anybody who wants to take a media studies course at a university, it don't have anything to do with the media. It will not help you get a job in the media. And then the other one, what, catering and tourism. The tourism industry's knackered. It's on its feet. We need to rebuild the tourism, but we don't rebuild it by bringing in young kids who don't know really what's going on. And I think what will happen is that the number of courses will be reduced into something that is actually workable and worth having. That might be the only upside on this.
Well,
Should we see who's on the phone?
That might be an upside, but of course...
Nothing, carry on, Mark.
But
sorry.
I was going to say, but, you know, who's going to be able to do these courses? I mean, if it really means that, you know, quite a substantial proportion of the young population are excluded from managing to do this, even though these people might be very worthy and very talented, you know, I find that that's shocking. I quite agree with you. I think that there's been a sort of a tendency over the years to go for easy option, non-academic courses, if you like. And I don't think that that's necessarily very good. But, you know, at least if we've got greater education for all, that can't be a bad thing. If we're reducing the amount of education,
it can't be a bad thing. But Mark, how can it be education for everybody if you think that students have got to decide now not to, you know, the basic premise from in my time to go to university, which I didn't do, was, let's see, I would just carry on being out of work and living off my parents and living in a bedsit and stuff like that and not working for another 5 years or 3 years or whatever you did. Now, that actual sort of hippie sort of Dionysic freedom has been taken away, and any student now ends up with a £40,000 debt. And guess what? They are homeless as well if the parents aren't putting them up. They might have a flat or something like that. But what if you get married and you want to settle down with your new bride or husband and buy a house, and you're both ex-students and you both got average jobs paying maybe, what, I don't know, £30,000 each, something like that. And between you, you've got £80,000 worth of debt. Tell me, who is going to lend you money to buy a house? Well, nobody. Mark, you've got 10 seconds.
Well, you know, once again, all I can say is that, you know, this scheme seems to me to be another scheme in David Cameron's big society. And why are we saying David Cameron's and Nick Clegg's big society?
Right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to go to our break, and we'll be back with you in quicker than it takes you to cook a cup of tea or whatever Eric said.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.